For 29 years, my next guest, Michael Nela, honed leadership skills while serving his nation in the policing profession before retiring as a police commander with the Aurora, Illinois Police Department. As a police officer, he served in many capacities and led the department's reengineering from a traditional police agency to a community policing department. A valued and sought-after speaker, Michael has trained and certified thousands of employees, executives, and trainers for notable organizations worldwide, such as the U.S. Department of Justice, Chicago Police Department, LAPD, NYPD, the United Nations, as well as military, government agencies, and Fortune 500 companies. Currently, Michael is the managing partner of Blue Courage. This is an organization committed to the design and delivery of world-class personal and organizational development solutions that unleash the untapped potential within. You're going to love this guest. A lot of great takeaways for every law enforcement and criminal justice professional out there. Next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Everybody, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. We continue to grow because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for tuning in, sharing it with your family and friends. A big shout out to all the brave men and women in uniform, no matter what you're doing out there, if you're in the military, if you're a first responder, whatever you were doing in criminal justice, we would not have this great country if it wasn't for you and your sacrifice. You are loved. You are cherished. Keep up the great work. I want to talk a minute about our sponsors out there, the people that help keep the lights on for the podcast, Detectachem. Detectachem is an amazing and innovative company that is protecting our brave men and women who protect us every day by offering mobile threat detection available for the palm of your hands, detecting illicit drugs. I wish they had this stuff, this technology around when I was a street officer years ago. Remember those NIC kits that we had to use? Some departments still use them, but now there's a solution to that. It's an app-based technology. It is amazing. Again, Detectachem, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, all from your mobile device. It is amazing. Head over to the website, check out the link to Detectachem, see how they can help you protect your troops. Folks, most of us are trying to get better every day, whether it's physically, mentally. Onnit can help you get there. Onnit is total human optimization, where athletes, biohackers, professionals, retirees, firefighters, police officers, we're all human, trying to get a little better at what we love every day. The human body is our instrument that we play to achieve greatness, and optimizing it for peak performance requires the proper nutrition, fitness, and supplementation. Onnit provides these foundations to support your human journey. If you head over to the website, cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Onnit. Check out their amazing products and apparel. You will not be disappointed. Oh, folks, I am so excited to offer my Evolve personal coaching to you or anybody else you know that might be struggling personally, professionally. I will show you how to turn those difficulties into opportunities for growth and development. I'm here to help you come up with sustainable long-term solutions so you can start living the life you're meant to live. Head over to the website right now, cjevolution.com. You're going to see a tab for coaching. That is my Evolve Personal Coaching. And book a free 45-minute discovery call with me. Let's help you become a better you today. And book that call, folks. On to the show with Michael Nela. Hello, everybody. So excited to have my next guest on the show, Michael Nela. He is a retired police commander with Aurora, Illinois Police Department, doing so much for our brave men and women out there. Michael, are you there?
I am here. Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much. And I know you just get back from a trip. I want to talk about it in a little bit because I'm excited about it. I know you had a great time. And I know you just rehashed this off the air, sir, but I ask all Leos, all law enforcement, when they come on the show, you know, what was the catalyst? Why did you want to become a police officer and serve your community?
What a great question. But I became a police officer because my uncle, my mother's brother, was hired as our city, Aurora, Illinois' first minority police officer hired in 1956. And so one of my earliest memories as a child is him driving up to our house. We lived in the city while he was on patrol, and he was 6'3", and he would get out of the police car in that, you know, magnificent uniform, and he would come to see our family. And when I was probably about 6 years old, my job was to go sit in the car because they didn't have portables, And when they would call his car number, I would run in the house and get him so he could, you know, obviously answer the call. But he deeply influenced me, literally through my adolescent years. He was a quasi-father to me. He was my role model. He was the most influential person next to my grandmother in my life. And he stayed with the Aurora Police Department for 9 years, and then he left to become a federal agent with what is today's DEA. Then it was the Federal Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. And he was one of the bureaus, even to this day's most celebrated undercover agents, made enormous cases, was federal agent, federal employee of the year in 1970, had gotten a promotion because of his work to open the first regional office for the Bureau in Southern Europe out of Madrid, Spain, 38 years old. He's Latin. He's going to Madrid. Life is good. And the night before he was to get on a flight to go to Spain, he was brutally attacked and beaten to death by seven people who were literally had attacked another agent. And he came to that agent's rescue and lost his life in the process. So, you know, his name is on that our National Police Memorial wall, and almost everything that I do in my work is really to honor his memory. He was the first person to ever talk about the sacred duty of police officers. He was the one who drilled into my heart and soul that policing is one of the most noble of callings. And when we do it right, it is the most noble thing that we can do with our jobs. And so I'm grateful to have his influence and him as the role model. And I've worked hard to keep his memory, you know, alive over all the course of all these years. Mm-hmm. He was beaten to death in September of 1970, and I started in the police department as a police cadet 2 weeks out of high school in June of 1970.
Oh, geez.
So it was a very, very brutal thing that happened in our life, but also something that I was able to draw incredible inspiration from.
Yeah, and I know we were talking off the, first of all, sorry for your loss, and we were talking off the air about how you didn't have a plan B. You knew you wanted to work for Aurora, Illinois, and you didn't have a plan B. You took the test, you aced the test, and you got hired almost immediately, which we talked about. That's pretty unheard of in police work, even back then.
Yeah, and I kind of took it for granted at the time, but now on reflection, because I know so many people who test in many, many police departments, and even in our own, people sure. who tested 4 and 5 times. And, you know, I had no plan B. My career was mapped out. I was going to be an Aurora cop. I was going to do that for 10 years. And then I was going to go work in the Bureau with my uncle. In fact, one of the things he always told me is that, you know, here's your career. You're going to start as a policeman in Aurora. You're going to work the street for 10 years. Don't let them make you a detective or give you a specialized assignment, because it's the street where you are going to learn to be a cop. It's that street work. Mm-hmm. And he said 10 years. And ironically, Malcolm Gladwell writes a book, you know, many, many, many years after that about takes 10,000 hours of deliberate practice to master sure. a craft. And my uncle intuitively knew it, that because mastery, that 10,000 hours, the roughly the equivalent of 10 years of mm-hmm. working life. But he said, learn the street, master that, then you're going to come with me in the Bureau, of course, not knowing that he wasn't going to survive, you know, that event. So I'm very grateful and blessed, because I always have believed that, you know, whoever you believe in up there, I believe in God's up there, but he picked me to do this work. And I always felt that I was blessed, because I was doing what he put me on this earth to do. And because of that, I was good at it. It came easy to me. And I was good at it. Got promoted, you know, rapidly through the ranks, and was teaching nationally when I had less than 10 years, you know, on the job as a cop, and has led me to this place now, 20 years later, from retirement, where we're influencing police officers literally all over the world.
Yeah, and that's a testament to your leadership, Michael, and I want to talk about that in a little bit. Now, you still have your finger. You talk to police officers all around the world all the time. What do you think? We all watch the news. It's such a tough – I think, Michael, and what – I think it's one of the toughest environments now to be a police officer. I did it for 23 years. I know you got more experience than I do. But have you ever seen it to the degree where our brave men and women out there, you saw what happened in New York City, these poor cops are getting water poured on them. They can't do anything because they're freaked out about reacting because they don't want to be labeled as something. What challenges, you know, besides I just mentioned, what other challenges do you see for law enforcement going forward? These brave men and women are under so much scrutiny, you know, yeah. and it's ridiculous, I think, that how some people are treating our brave men and women.
Yeah, I believe that there's a number of factors that are making this, and perhaps, you know, I've been in this profession in some way, shape, or fashion almost for 50 years. Next year will be my 50th year. And I think this was the most challenging of times for a number of reasons, you know, and I'm not talking about the violence, because a lot of young police officers just think that the violence, the murders and the assaults on police officers is like at an all-time high. Well, it's not. You know, the 70s, when I was a cop in the street, was the most violent, other than prohibition, for law enforcement officers in the country. But the difference between now and then is we were led by leaders, and I'm not going to say that they were good leaders, but what they did do is they backed us up. Mm-hmm. What they did, there was no uncertainty for us when we hit the street. We knew that we were in dangerous times. We knew that there were people out there putting bombs in police stations. You know, there was the FALN and the Black Liberation Army and all of these subversive groups that were across the country. This is not going to be accurate, but I read recently in the 70s, there was something like 40 some bombings a day in this country from these subversive groups, and many of them targeting police stations. So the violence level was intense, but the difference was we were certain about what we were doing. We didn't worry about policy. We didn't worry about being backed up. We didn't worry about, of course, cameras, you know, capturing us doing things that we probably shouldn't have done. So we had a strong brotherhood and a strong sense of camaraderie, and we were very, very close, and we had each other's backs. Today, what I see is something very different. Police officers are uncertain. They're worried about policy. They're concerned, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? I believe we're bombarding them with choices and with training that is confusing them. You know, back in the 70s, we had nothing. We had a gun, we had a stick, and we had handcuffs, and we had a flashlight. Now they've got tasers and all these different things, and the policy is so confusing. And then we're being led by leaders who are not always courageous and backing us up. And so the times that I see today, I see a dispirited profession. I see a profession today of police officers that are grounded and steeped in uncertainty. And I call that a leadership failure.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm passionate about teaching leadership and trying to awaken the hearts and minds of the leaders of today, because our police officers need strength from them. They need certainty from them. They need to know that even if we make a mistake, they're going to have their backs. And police officers today don't have that, except in rare police departments where you have great leaders. And there are some great leaders out there, but that's not the bulk of our profession.
And I agree 100%. You know, Michael, that people aren't flocking to law enforcement. Yeah. Like in years past, I remember, you know, when I first got on the job, you know, there'd be hundreds of applicants. People are leaving at alarming rates, at least from what I hear and what I read. The attrition rates are through the roof, and it's just going to scare away people, I think, good people that would make good officers. They're not going to join because of all this stuff going on.
Well, there's two factors to that. One is we're not getting the numbers of applicants, but even more than that, we're not getting the quality applicants.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because quality people are saying no to it. And worse, police officers who are currently serving are not actively recruiting people and saying, come, join. This is the place for you. This is a great career. Instead, they don't want their loved ones or the good friends to be police officers because of the climate and the tone and the disrespect, like you talked about with the officers in New York and at other places. So we know the research now is bearing out that, you know, something like 90 to 95% of police officers who are currently serving would not recommend this profession to a friend or a loved one. That's unheard of. So we're not recruiting the best of people. I just talked to a friend of mine today who is the son of a police officer that I served with in Aurora, Illinois. And he was just telling me he applied for the job. The list just came out in September. He's number 85 on the list, and they've already gone through 80 people, rejecting 90% of them.
Yeah,
literally in a month. So that tells you the kind of candidates that we're getting that aren't able to pass a background or, you know, other parts of the testing process. So we're a profession that's in jeopardy because we're not people my age, of course, are flooding out of the profession, leaving an incredible experiential vacuum. So we have young supervisors leading young police officers. We have young FTOs teaching our police officers because we're a very young profession. And I fear that the best of the best are leaving, and the best of the best are not coming into this profession. Mm-hmm.
And I think, like you talked about, Michael, I want to get into what you and your great team do with personal and, you know, development, leader and organizational development. But I think it has to start with leadership. Yeah, I agree with you 100% what you said about leadership. If leadership aren't backing up officers, if we're not trying to retain our best and brightest, people are going to leave. And then, like you said, that's that leadership void that now is gone, which makes it more problematic for the agency. I saw that in my agency where we had a new administration comes in. There was a lot of attrition, people leaving, and that's normal. And some, you know, sometimes, I mean, people, yeah, you know, it happens. But I think we could have done a better job with my administration at leadership and keeping people, good people, within the ranks, you know, within the department, instead of just saying, all right, well, screw it. You know, it's almost like they had that mentality. Well, okay, go. There's plenty of people out there. No, there's not. There's not plenty of people out there. Everybody's vying for the same quality candidates. And if when you treat people like crap, they're going to leave. And then, you know, what do you do? I would, and then, like you said, I've seen departments, Mike, I don't know about you, lower their standards, which is the worst thing you can do. I'd rather be short on the street than lower the standards and get some person that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All of those factors are in place right now, which makes leadership, well, I always say there's the three most powerful influencers on a police officer. You know, how do they determine how they're going to behave at 3 o'clock in the morning when nobody's watching? Mm-hmm. The three most powerful influencers, number one is leadership. How do we lead them? Are we leading them courageously, leading them in the right way, protecting them, and also nurturing their capacity and their capabilities? Those are the two crucial responsibilities that leaders have. One, take care of their people, make them safe, and two, nurture them and grow them so that they enhance their capacity constantly. Mm-hmm. The second most powerful influencer, which is right up there with leadership, is how do we enculturate them? You know, what is the culture that we're introducing these police officers to? And are we intentionally, as leaders, creating a culture that is healthy and that is leading to this quest for mastery and fueling intellectual curiosity and helping our people be the best they can be? And the third is education. How do we educate them? I didn't say train. How do we educate them? Because we have a tremendous emphasis on training, which is really important. We need to train our people so they're highly skilled and they know how to use the tools of our craft. But if you think about it, education is a much higher calling. It's mm-hmm. it's what allows people to discern and leads them to wisdom and maturity. You know, and if we're only training people, we're training people by rote to do things, but not to think in the moment. And we need people who have that capacity to think. We're in the business of justice. Mm-hmm. And justice doesn't live in black and white extremes. It lives in 1,000 shades of gray. Yeah. And we have to have police officers who are able to navigate that and are serving the cause at a very high level because of the mission, and not doing what they do just because the policy says, or there's something that says you shall. You know, the San Francisco Police Department, they counted the number of shells in their policy and in bulletins that came out over the course of 1 year. And again, I'm not going to get this number right, but it was like in the hundreds. We're eroding the discretion of our people, and the discretion, to me, is the greatest tool we have.
Sure.
So how do we promote and allow people to think for themselves and pursue the right ends? And without that, we're always having to manage them.
And you allow our brave men and women to go out there with a gun and a badge, make life and death decisions, and you have to micromanage them in some cases. Like with San Fran, I'm not trying to beat up on San Francisco Police Department, but we all read the news. And I mean, it's ridiculous. And I don't know where it's going, Michael. I mean, where do you think it's going? I mean, it's getting
worse, because our leadership response to a challenge is put out a new policy, create a new general order, do mandatory training.
Cannot lead by policy.
That's exactly right. You know, policies are supposed to be guidelines. They're mm-hmm. not supposed to be, you know, absolutes for us. You know, I have long jokingly said, look, we hired the best and brightest. We put them through these psychological battery of tests and everything else. We hire the best and brightest. We train them the best we can. And then we treat them like children, you know. And I always used to joke, you know, I can take life, but I have to call a sergeant to decide if I can tow a car.
That's absolutely right.
Enough, that's still the policy in too many organizations today. We can't trust you to make a decision about that, but man, you can go out there and take a life, and you can take people's freedom away in our country where our most precious gift is freedom in life.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely absurd. And that's why I place so much emphasis on leadership, culture, and education. And when we nail those three, the leadership challenge is 90-95% done because people are self-led. Yeah. You know, they're driven by the right purpose and they're being fed by the right nutrients that fuel their heart, their soul, their mind, their capacity. And then we don't have to micromanage them in second.
So let's come back to you and your team are experts in personal and organizational development. I want to talk about Blue Courage in a little bit. Let's start with personal development first. How can an officer out there or anybody listening to the show, Michael, unlock their potential? Because we always hear, you know, most people have unlocked potential. And I think they're afraid to tap into that potential. Maybe their fear of ridicule by their peers. But how can people listening right now, if they're thinking, you know, okay, it's great. I love what Blue Courage is doing. I love what they're doing about professional and personal development. But what advice would you give for somebody out there, Michael, to unlock their potential?
Well, the first piece of advice I would give them is what you just said, mm-hmm. The focus on the personal development, because I believe that too often our police officers wait for the organization to create the opportunities for them to be developed. And unfortunately, few of us work for organizations that are really going to do that. It's on me to drive my own personal development. It's on me to create my own sense of health and wellness, my own attitude. It's on me to combat cynicism and all those other things that erode our capacity. So it starts with number one, you know, the fire to be the best version of myself I can be, whether it's as a police officer, as a parent, as a spouse, a human being. It starts with that drive and fire and hunger to simply be the best. You said something that is one of my greatest sadnesses about our profession, and that is we have so much wasted talent in this profession, because the ones who get hired, they come to us the best of the best. They are hungry, whether they came because they needed a job or not. They still know what this job is, and they still know that it's challenging, and they still know that they have to be really, really great to do it. So we hire good people with amazing capacity, amazing drive, and amazing passion, and then we very quickly allow that to die, or sadly enough, we kill it. Mm-hmm. And then we have police officers who just settle. You know, I know I have a lot of retired friends as police officers, and the most common refrain from them is regret. I wish I had worked harder. I wish I had studied. I wish I had gone to school. I wish I had prepared myself, because we begin to settle and we begin to believe this is all there is. You know, police department's messed up, the profession's messed up, the citizens don't care. You know, I work with slugs, you know, and when you do have somebody who is reading books and going to school and is charged up and fired up and wanting to be productive, the masses will tell you, hey, what are you doing? You know, you're making us look bad. Don't do that. You know, slow down, kid. What are you in a hurry for? And so the very culture is a culture of status quo and mediocrity. Mm-hmm. And so one of the powerful things of Blue Courage is we're lighting a fire under people to say, look, take responsibility, you know, take responsibility for your own growth. Read, you got to read. The fact that most of our cops don't read, I always say, if you're going to lead, you better read. I don't care if you read bumper stickers or lyrics to songs or poetry. You just have to read. You got to feed your mind. Mm-hmm. And so many of the cops that come into our classes just are lethargic. I was going to say, so you're hitting on the personal development is one of the core drivers of Blue Courage, to accept responsibility for who you are and who you are not, and light a fire under yourself and just incrementally start feeding that. You know, the only reason I'm doing what I'm doing today is because I was so passionate about my profession. I studied hard. I took every opportunity I could to learn from mentors. And I took a lot of grief. I had a captain, actually, when I was a lieutenant shift commander, a captain called me into his office and tell me the other shift commanders, because we shared an office, were complaining because I was bringing books into work. The books were like In Search of Excellence, One Minute Manager, and I was coaching my sergeants on these kind of books, and we'd read them together. And the other lieutenants complained about it. And the captain actually said, you know, I said, are you telling me not to do that with my sergeants and not to bring books? I'm not bringing pornography in. Nobody's ever complained about the file cabinet loaded with pornography. But now you're complaining because I'm bringing leadership books in and teaching my sergeants. And he said, well, yeah, it's great in trouble, so don't do it. So the next day, I brought books into my work, but I put them in a briefcase. And it was from that day forward, every time I came into work, I carried a briefcase in and out. Nobody knew what I brought in, and nobody knew what I took out. But that was the culture of our organization. And sadly enough, that's still alive today.
And I've always said, Michael, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, you know, law enforcement is an inherently toxic environment. You know, people do not call the police when things are going great. People call us when you know what hits the fan, and that's just the nature of the job. But it shouldn't be toxic internally. And that's what I see a lot in organizations is it's this, we breed this toxicity in internally. And one of the best things I ever did, Michael, was, and I love my brothers and sisters in blue, but get friends outside of law enforcement. You are who you associate with. If you hang out with the toxic cops, and every organization has them, and everybody, their job sucks, people suck, everything sucks, you are going to be that person. Jim Rohn famously said, you're the average of the five people you associate with.
Yeah.
My advice to every cop out there, when I talk to them, is that I'm not bashing police work. I'm not telling you that, but you got to have balance. You got to talk to people that are outside the profession, in my opinion, because not everybody out there is a criminal. Not everybody out there is, as a matter of fact, in my opinion, the majority of people aren't criminals. But those 10% or 15% of what we deal with jade us so deeply that we carry that for years. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. And then it's internally as well. And that's just not healthy. I mean, it's just not healthy for you.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And I would add one little bit to that. And I would say there are people in our organizations who get it and who have the right attitudes. It's not just about hanging around with people outside of the business. I think that's healthy too. But hanging out and finding the healthy people in our business, those role models who are doing it right and aren't toxic and don't hate the world and haven't let that, you know, the job jade them, they're here. They're around us. But the problem is they're a silent minority. But we need to find them, and we need to let them be the ones who are influencing us in the right way. Mm-hmm. So it's both of those equations, you know. Yeah. And the interesting thing about, you know, how we are educating our cops, you know, when we created Blue Courage, I always say we were a team of cops who were not smart enough to have created Blue Courage. Almost everything in Blue Courage, with the exception of our purpose, we went to people outside of this profession who were subject matter experts on things like culture, resilience, ethics, practical wisdom, respect. We went to them because they had spent their lives researching, writing, teaching on these topics that we believed were the gaps between how cops should be and how we are. And we let them teach us what we didn't know. And what we didn't know about these things could fill, you know, libraries. But what we then did is we learned, we spent a year learning from them, and then we translated what we learned into police language and examples and created Blue Courage. So the lesson in that is we need to go outside of our profession to learn often and not just to coach us and guide us. My personal coach was Dr. Stephen Covey. Mm. And I was blessed to be able to have a personal relationship with him and have him influence me to the degree that he did. Blue Courage is a reflection literally of its seven habits on steroids, but it was because of his influence. So I was blessed to be influenced by my uncle in terms of the deep purpose and honor and nobility of this profession. But I was also blessed to be influenced by people who were amazing on these human effectiveness principles and organizational leadership, all of whom were outside of the business of policing.
Why do you think it's so difficult for people, Michael, to get out of their comfort zone? Maybe I just answered the question, but why do you think it? And leaders too, this goes into organizational development and organizational growth. Do you think leadership, if they say, well, you know, we're going to back the officers, or I was a commander, I know you were, Do you think that that's a sign of weakness? I mean, I don't. I think it's a sign of strength to recognize problems within an organization, address them, listen to people. But I know so many people in the upper echelons, they don't want to say, look, I don't know, or I want to listen from the troops. I want to learn from the troops. They view it as a sign of weakness in a lot, in my experience, not all the time, but in some cases, I mean, they do, which is obviously wrong.
There's no question. I mean, the inability or unwillingness to step out of our comfort zone into discomfort and to lean into it is fear-based. Mm-hmm. You know, we spend the majority of our lives in our comfort zones. Why? Because that's where we feel safe. Mm-hmm. That's where we know how to respond to life. I always say when we're in our comfort zones, our competencies are not being called into question. We know how to do exactly what life is expecting of us when we're in the comfort zone. That's why we love to be there. But the problem is, in our comfort zone, there is zero growth and learning taking place because we already know how to do what the comfort zone is demanding. It is only when we step out of that comfort zone into discomfort where we begin to grow and learn. You know, frustration, impatience, ignorance, fear, those are all states of learning if we are willing to lean into them. But most of us are not. And then when we're faced with difficulty, when we're in our discomfort zone and, you know, hair starts raising in the back of our neck and the gut starts churning and we start saying, what am I doing here? Every ounce of our human weakness wants to run right back to the comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And so we're too quick to do that. You know, one of the phrases I often use is we must learn as leaders and certainly as police officers, we must learn to be comfortable with discomfort. Mm-hmm. That's when we are growing and learning and pushing ourselves to that very, very next level. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it has always shocked me. And I remember the day that I came to this understanding. I was a shift commander. I was in my office. I just had a brutal conversation with one of my officers. And when he left my office, I had two thoughts. The first one was, I don't know if I like police officers very much because we can be so hateful and so mean, you know, unkind to one another and so quick to defend ourselves. Well, that comes from fear. That comes for I'm be uncomfortable with this conversation I'm having, or I'm uncomfortable with what I'm experiencing. So the only thing cops know how to do is fight.
Yeah.
And fight back, you know, in somewhat of a less than kind manner. The second thought I had was, everything I've done in my career since then has affirmed this to me, that it stuns me that most police officers in our profession, when you see them, they're the picture of strength and stoicism, and we're rushing in when people are rushing out, and, you know, we can count on people to do all those things. But the reality is many of our police officers inside are a quivering mass of insecurity. And it's our organizations and our leadership that is responsible for that, that has created that uncertainty, that second guessing constantly, that gotcha kind of leadership mentality that destroys the confidence of our police officers. Mm-hmm. And so that's that lack of strength and courage causes us to be silent. It causes us to learn to color inside the lines. It causes us not to learn not to raise challenges in our organizations and just ride it out. You know, we've all learned, hey, you want to be safe here. Just, you know, don't push the envelope. Don't push the margins, you know, best to be silent. Don't be seen. Mm-hmm. And what a tragedy that is to the hearts and minds of our special people who wear that uniform.
Yeah. And then like we talked about, people aren't flocking anymore to law enforcement. It gets harder and harder to maintain the rank and, you know, in the officers that we need. I was talking to a police officer a couple of weeks ago where a department he knows is down 100 cops, 100 officers. And that's you probably heard of these agencies too.
That's nothing. I mean, some big departments down 1,000 officers.
Yeah, that is unbelievable. And I'm sure there's many other factors that contribute to that. But anyway, I want to shift gears a little bit, Michael, if you don't mind. Okay. We talked about this. And I want you to talk about your trip with the next topic, if you could, sir. We talked about it a couple weeks ago before you went on your trip. How important is mindfulness when it comes to, you know, not only everyday life personally, but professionally? It's a cornerstone, I've told you off the air, to my daily routine, my morning routine. I start every day, whether it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, at the very least, it's 10 minutes of doing mindfulness and just reflecting, deep breathing techniques. I mean, how important do you think it is?
Well, it's funny. You had asked me that question 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago, I would have laughed. Today, it is the source of our nourishment. It is the source of our clarity. It is the source of our patience, of our centering, and it is the source of our physical and emotional well-being. And that cannot be overstated. The research is absolutely clear and reinforcing what mystics have said and taught for thousands of years. You know, having just come back from this, you know, mindfulness pilgrimage with our team in India, you know, we meditated every single morning at sunrise, and we meditated every single evening, you know, at the end of the day as well. And so our teacher, our mindfulness guru, David G, who was, he used to be the Deepak Chopra's, the dean of his school of meditation at the Chopra Center, has been absolutely brilliant in getting us as a team of cops to go from zero, knowing nothing about mindfulness, to now making it an essential, absolute part of our life. And every single one of us will tell you that our lives have been transformed in the 5 years that we have been practicing mindfulness to the level that we are. One of the critical factors for us as police officers and just anybody in 21st century life is that we live in a world of distractions. Mm-hmm. We live in a world where there's rarely silence. I'm sitting in my house right now. My house is a stone house. It's like a fortress. And there's no sound in my house right now except for my voice. Mm-hmm. And I'm in awe. When I shut the TV off, turn music off, and it's this just silence, I'm in awe of the peace and the stillness that I'm able to experience. We don't have those moments in our life. It's we go from moment to moment, to thought, to chaos, and we do it again tomorrow. And we now know at the genetic cellular level, we now know that our cells are experiencing and being influenced by every emotion and experience we have throughout a day. And if we don't have a mechanism to cleanse those cells, to get to reset them, then a perfect cell replicates itself in an imperfect way, which is the beginning of disease. So this isn't, mindfulness isn't just a nice to do. This is about the very source of our health and our wellness and our immunity to disease, not to mention our own emotional health and well-being. I cannot emphasize it enough. And here's the amazing part to me. We call meditation stillness and silence in Blue Courage. And we call it that because we were afraid to call it meditation. We thought, oh, cops are going to laugh at us. You know, they'll shoot us. And we're going to meditate. We were so wrong. Our cops are ready for it. You know, not all of them, but a vast majority, when we say we're going to do it, I can't tell you how many of them say, first of all, my spouse is doing it in her corporate job. You know, our children are learning it in school. You know, we're already meditating because we have doctors who have told us to do it. It's the best kept secret amongst our rank and file. And so what we have found is the vast majority are ready to do this and are ready to practice it. Perhaps not on a regular, consistent basis, but they're understanding the health benefits that, you know, I think can turn into the rituals where they can develop a practice like you and I have.
Yeah. And it's, like I said, every morning without fail, I start my morning with meditation. And the first thing I do, Michael, is practice, you know, I before I even hit the floor with my feet, I practice like a, you know, I do like a grateful meditation where I go through my mind every, at the very least, I tell cops who, you know, I talk to all the time while they're pissed off the world. I say, you have much to be grateful for. What are you talking about? I said, you're alive at the very least. You're breathing, you know? Right. I mean, so I, that really, you know, I love that. I mean, I could talk about mindfulness and meditation all day long. And I'm the same with you, sir. If you would have asked me this a handful of years ago, I would have laughed at you and said, are you crazy? We have beads in my hands and a robe and stuff. Yeah. Now it is has transformed my life every day, and I just feel so great after I meditate. And there's a reason why law enforcement agencies everywhere are adopting it. There's a reason why the U.S. military. I talked to Navy SEALs, Michael, that have been on my show. These are the biggest, baddest guys in the world, and they meditate every day.
Yeah.
Not one, very few times do I have a guest on, really quick, sir, that doesn't have some sort of 90% of my guests, and I've had over 300, have a meditation practice as their daily routine.
Well, and the reason you have them on your show is because there's something special about them that they're offering to the profession and the way that they live their life. And what's the commonality, as you say, is the majority of them meditate. And you're right. It's the reason the military does it. I mean, even, you know, the Navy SEAL Team 6 that went on the raid to get Osama bin Laden when 60 Minutes said, what were you doing on the long plane ride? We were sitting in controlled breathing.
Yeah.
We were just calm, slowing our heart rate down. You know, there's a reason Olympic athletes do it and professional athletes do it. You know, as cops, we must do it. And now we have, I'm so proud that, you know, we have police departments like the Tempe Police Departments. You know, they're sitting in stillness and silence, meditating in roll call before they go out to the shift. You know, so it's becoming less of a woo-woo thing and much, much more commonplace than it ever used to be. And I'm glad that Blue Courage is a part of, you know, breaking down that barrier.
I love it. And talk a little bit more about Blue Courage. I know we've been talking about it a lot during the show, Michael, but talk about, I know you talk to many people, you have keynotes, you do, you know, you talk about so many different, you got courses that you offer. I mean, tell us what Blue Courage does.
Yeah, it's, excuse me. Blue Courage is an educational process. And, you know, I emphasize the word process because, you know, it's a 2-day course, typically, or like you said, we do keynotes and we do train the trainers, which turns into a 4-day course, but it's typically a 2-day course. But Blue Courage is a much more than that 2 days. It's a process. It's a way of life. It's a way of living your life that must go way beyond those 2 days if you're going to literally get to that place of transformation. Our why for Blue Courage, our purpose, our reason for existing is to illuminate a path forward so that we ignite transformation. So if you kind of begin to rip that apart, you know, we believe that Blue Courage is about illuminating the places, the things that we are ignorant to that are going to help us be healthier and happier and flourish in a profession rather than simply to survive. It's shining the light into the darkest places that either are steeped in ignorance or are steeped in our unwillingness to go there. We know that light is the greatest disinfectant. We know that light is the greatest cleanser, that, you know, light always follows darkness and we can't sustain life without light. So our first reason for being is to shine a light on those things that can show a path forward for our people. Blue Courage is a leadership development process, and we say a path forward because leadership, great leadership, always goes in a forward direction. It never stands still, and it is never about maintaining the status quo. It's always moving us forward. And our goal is to ignite individual and organizational transformation. Because great leadership is always about moving people from the place that they are to the place where they aspire to be or perhaps should be. And when we talk about transformation, we're not talking about, you know, doing a 180 or a 360, because that's too daunting. That's exhausting even to imagine that. Our transformation is baby steps. We know that that small steps lead to great distance. And when we can tweak little things in our life, you know, start meditating 2 minutes a day. That's a tiny little thing, 2 minutes a day. But it transforms us. If you, yesterday you could do 10 push-ups, today you can do 12, that's transformation. Mm-hmm. If yesterday you could run 5 minutes, today you can do 5 minutes and 15 seconds, that's transformation. So we exist in Blue Courage to do that. That's our deep why, that's our purpose. And so how do we go about that? As I said, we have learned from the masters, the people like the Simon Sinek's of the world, the Stephen Covey's of the world, the Jim Collins and brilliant ethicists who have taught us so much, and cultural anthropologists, the HeartMath people on the science and biology of resilience and fight or flight. We have studied from these folks, and now we're giving that knowledge to police officers through Blue Courage. So this is, it's a way of being, it's a way of looking differently at your life, and most significantly, it's a way of combating the negativity, the toxicity, the slow drip of toxicity that begins to take over our life. And the most common refrain that we get from cops in our evals is, I feel renewed, I feel refreshed, I remember now why I came on this job, I remember why the days I was in love with the job. Yeah, if you can just create that emotion, the transformation has begun.
Yeah, and it takes that officer to go back after they've been through your training to go back, and they can be that change agent within the organization. It doesn't have to start with leadership. Leadership's an important component, but no matter who you are in an organization, you can be that change agent.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, you can be the spark. You know, we talk about in Blue Courage, sending ripples out. We always ask, and our very last module is called The Immortal Cop, which is really about legacy. And, you know, it's the realization that what we do as police officers, for good or for ill, gets wound and bound in the fabric and stories of people's lives. Yeah. And we forget more that we do on this job than we will remember. But the people who will always remember is the people that we interacted with. Yeah. The people who we shared those moments with, and they carry them with them forever. That makes our actions on this job absolutely immortal. So we always ask people, what ripples are you sending out? You know, your energy is a ripple. What ripples are you sending out in your interactions, through how you carry yourself, to how you speak, to how you interact with people? Because every single thing that we do in this, as when we are taking our breaths of life, we're sending ripples out in the universe.
Yeah. Law of attraction, brother.
That's right.
What you put out there, I talk about this a lot. That really changed my life too. A couple of years ago, when reading The Secret, you know The Secret, I tell people all the time, you know, what you're sending out to the universe, you're gonna get back.
Yeah, one of the core learnings that we got in the development of Blue Courage was James Allen's "As a Man Thinketh." Which is the way precursor to The Secret. You know, I think it was written in like 1908, been described as one of the 100 most influential pieces of literature. But we always encourage our attendees in Blue Courage to download it. You can download it for free, more of a monograph. But it's all of that. How we are nothing more than products of how we think.
Yeah.
So our thinking produces our behaviors, and our behaviors creates the results. So if we control this magnificent thing that we have called a mind, and if we let this magnificent machine called a heart fuel the mind, then we transform our lives.
Yeah. Oh, Michael Nila, such an honor to have you on the show, sir. How can people find you, your amazing team in Blue Courage?
Well, our website is just simply bluecourage.com. So that's the easiest way. My email, personal email, is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, at bluecourage.com. So anybody can email me or go right to our website. There's a lot of information on our website. But the easiest way, reach out to me. And, you know, we love our profession. We exist to feed our profession, nurture it. Everything that I know, I've learned from somebody else. So we're more than willing always to share what we have and what we've learned with the great men and women in our profession.
Michael, thank you so much, sir. Any final words of wisdom, piece of advice you'd give the listener out there before we leave?
Read. Yeah, it's just, interesting. I just finished reading General Mattis's book called Chaos. You know, we think chaos means that, you know, he was a creator of chaos, but it really meant the commander has an outstanding solution, which I found phenomenal. But in his book, he writes that, and I'm probably not going to get this figure exactly correct, but it's something like, if you haven't read at least 400 books in your field, you are functionally illiterate. Doesn't own a TV. He has 2,000 books. He's never been married. His entire life has been studying life, philosophy, the great works of our philosophers through the times, warfare, ancient generals. He's become a soldier scholar. So if I could give a piece of advice to our people, I'd say, you know, get on that path to become a police officer scholar, because then you will serve the world and honor the great nobility of the sacred calling that we have to defend this democracy and this great nation called America.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show, sir. I wish we could talk more. I'd love to have you back on. And thank you for your many years of service to this noble profession, sir. And like I said, I'd love to have you back on in the future. And anything we can do for you or your organization, sir, please reach out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. It's a privilege to both meet you and to be on here with your podcast. And I would be honored to come on anytime that you want. We do have a lot to talk about. So yeah, absolutely. Anytime. I'm here to serve.
All right, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.